DW Africa Link.
Are you brave enough to be a whistleblower? A whistleblower can be defined as someone who exposes illegal, unethical, or improper activities of an individual, government, or organization. They often do so at the risk of being harmed or even killed by those who are threatened by the exposure of their wrongdoing. So why do we fail to protect those who uncover the worst crimes? Stay tuned. My name is Josie Mahachi. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from Africa and beyond.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
More often than not, potential whistleblowers have to consider their future, their loved ones, their well-being, and more importantly, their own safety. Yet the ones who want to come forward even in the face of danger know that whistleblowing is important in combating corruption and other crimes. With the exception of Eritrea, all African countries are party to the United Nations Convention Against Corruption, UNCAC, which binds all nations who are signatories to the convention to protect whistleblowers. But as we know, whistleblowers still face a myriad of challenges across the continent. So how do we protect whistleblowers? Joining me for this discussion is journalist Mimi Mefo and Ghana's investigative journalist Manasseh Azure Awuni. I know that both of you have worked with whistleblowers in one way or the other on different stories in different countries. But I'll start with you, Manasseh. What does it mean to be a whistleblower?
What it means is to put out information that is not known and sometimes with the intention of getting redress. And some blow the whistle behind the scenes and then some do it openly. As an investigative journalist, I have had the opportunity to blow the whistle on very serious corruption or human rights issues that caught the attention of the nation and then got some responses. There have been times that I also work as an intermediary between the public and other whistleblowers, that someone sees an issue of corruption, wants that issue out, but maybe does not have all the tools and the skills to get the issue out properly, or they are so afraid for their life that they think that someone else has to do it. So I see it in two ways. Either the person openly blowing the whistle or alerting an investigative journalist or other civil society actors or even state agencies to take action on certain issues of national interest.
Okay. It's only fair for me to ask the same question to you as well, Mimi.
Yeah, of course, Josie. Like Manasseh said, whistleblowing is something that is not very different from being an investigative journalist, because when you're an investigative journalist, the only difference is as an investigative journalist, you try to dig further. But then being a whistleblower is like you are someone who denounces wrongdoing. You speak truth to power publicly or even maybe privately via an intermediary. But also sometimes whistleblowing has to do with telling stories that some people, individuals, organizations, or governments do not want them told. So it comes with a lot of consequences, impacts, but there's this close relationship between a whistleblower and journalism, because at the end of the day, the job is the same. We are doing the same thing, trying to denounce the wrong things that are happening around us and telling the stories of the people, even yourself, or telling the story of your community, some of the stories that you want told. So that is the job of a whistleblower.
Okay. Now, Manasseh, what inspired you to come forward as a whistleblower, knowing the risks involved, especially in Africa, where enforced disappearances are a real threat?
The reason I do this is that I find it as my own way of contributing to the building of Ghana's democracy and also the development of my country. And there are occasions that I find it very outrageous, some of the things that happen to helpless people. So I get angry at some of the things and move out to try to resolve them. So the reason I do what I do is in twofold. One, my commitment to my country through journalism, and sometimes the personal outrage I feel about injustices that happen to people and sometimes institutions in Ghana.
Yeah. Now, Mimi, you have reported a lot on enforced disappearances, not just in Cameroon, where you come from, but also in Africa. How prevalent are enforced disappearances among whistleblowers in Africa? Are there particular countries where you'd say this is more common?
Several cases in Cameroon where journalists get arrested, some even get killed. It's as bad as that. I don't know if there's any country in West or Central Africa that has faced or seen the level of censorship that we've seen in Cameroon in the last 3 years. We've had at least 5 journalists killed, no investigations in place by the authorities. And up to now, we have the case of Wazizi. We have the case of Martinez Zogo, who was kidnapped, and then later he just died, and we saw his body being brandished across social media. And it was so shocking for us as journalists. We even have the Communication Regulatory Board, which is the National Communication Council, which is strangely also working against the media. So almost everything that is in place to make sure that journalism works smoothly, whistleblowing, I would say also, and even citizen journalism, freedom of expression should go on as it should be. They're actually working against the media and shutting down the media and also even suspending programs, especially programs that are holding government to account and criticizing the actions of the government. So it's like, you know, you don't exactly know how to go around it. It's really, really challenging, so to speak. So, yeah.
And have you ever personally received threats or felt that your life was in danger because of your whistleblowing activities, Manasseh? I mean, do you live with fear of, I think you actually had to flee Ghana twice. How does this affect your day-to-day life?
Between 2019 and 2021, I actually had to move with armed police escort. So I'm driving with a policeman armed in my car, and that was provided by the government. Then also in 2019, I had to flee to South Africa because of death threats. In 2020, part of that brought me to Germany. Even whilst I was in Germany, I got an email that actually confirmed the intelligence I got and had to leave the country. The fiscal or those surveillance or people trailing you have been very common. Back home, there were times I had to move from one hotel to the other. All of this also resulted in serious mental health challenges. So I started seeing a therapist in 2021, getting to 2022. And then part of the recommendation from the therapist was if I could take a break because the center of the problem was my work. And so he suggested that I take a break from journalism. And it was that break that resulted in me applying to the Nieman Fellowship at Harvard and then going and now continuing with my studies here at the University of Nebraska in Lincoln. So these are very, very difficult challenges. And sometimes with security issues, you are unable to say everything, but I can say for a fact that it is quite dangerous. And in my country, in 2019, an undercover agent who was working with Anas, Arabia Anas, came under threat, and a certain politician who was a member of parliament, and then the chairman of the Defense and Interior Committee of Ghana's parliament, put his photograph on television, national television, and said, look, You don't know this guy. He's undercover. This is where he lives. If you find him anywhere, attack him, and I will be responsible. A few months later, Ahmed Swale, for that was the name of the man, was shot and killed in the same location that a member of parliament said he lived. And as we speak, nobody has been held accountable for the murder of Ahmed Swale. And that tells you how dangerous it is to operate in an environment that you can be threatened, you can be killed, and nobody suffers or loses sleep over the killing. And that has been my problem.
Yeah. Now, Mimi, you've heard Manasseh's problems in terms of his work and obviously being a whistleblower and also a journalist. Now, you also do a lot of investigative stories, investigative journalism. How does these problems that Manasseh just mentioned and also enforced disappearances of whistleblowers affect other potential whistleblowers in Africa?
Yeah, just a few days ago, the Cameroonian authorities repatriated an activist, a Cameroonian who was living in Gabon, simply because he was denouncing some of the issues that are affecting the Cameroonian society, bad governance, calling for change in the country. And even when human rights were being violated of ordinary Cameroonian citizens, he will go out there on social media and denounce them and talk against them. But this is just an activist. And if the government could go that far as repatriating someone who is in Gabon out of the country to bring that person back to Cameroon just to shut him down, he has very little influence. What more of journalists, especially those who are talking to hundreds of thousands and millions like Manasseh and myself? When I was in Cameroon, like, because now I work with the German broadcaster DW. I'm in Germany. I have been there since 2019. I came to the UK and then I had to come to Germany where I'm currently working. I had to stay back because going back to Cameroon meant that I might be rearrested again. Because let me just say a little bit about what happened. I was arrested, handcuffed, and then taken to prison because I reported about the killing of an American missionary in Cameroon. And further reports and investigations indicated that that's actually what happened. But then I was arrested. And because of that, it was difficult for me to even release some investigative stories that I had worked on. So these are some of the things that you do, and you cannot release those stories because you are afraid that you could be targeted by the authorities. They send trolls. They can spend millions of francs EFA to put people under your social media platforms who come there and insult you. It's even more complicated now in Cameroon with the separatist conflict, because when you even report, the separatists will want you to take their sides. The government will want you to take their sides. So even the whistleblowers that come forward, it's very, very complicated for them. That's how bad the situation is in Cameroon now.
I also want to know from Manasseh and also Mimi, after Manasseh answers this, how do ordinary citizens in Africa view whistleblowers, especially those who become victims of enforced disappearances or maybe their families? Is there widespread sympathy, or do people stay silent out of fear? I'm so sure even on social media, you're also labeled as snitches, you know?
Yes, it is mixed. But I don't think we get the needed reaction that people who suffer such violence, forced disappearances and attacks would get in other parts of the world. A journalist was killed, I think, in the Netherlands. A crime reporter was killed. And the European Union and almost everybody condemned it. People were arrested and imprisoned. When Ahmed Swale was shot and killed in Ghana, Ghana's president, speaking at a national bar conference, a lawyers' conference, said that it shouldn't be taken to be an attack on journalists. And constantly, the government of Ghana, through its ministers, have said that they checked and the guy wasn't even a journalist, as if being a journalist or not being a journalist really mattered in the gravity of the crime that was committed against him. So when these things happen, you expect the public to rally around and call for action. But there was no protest in Ghana, apart from the Journalist Association and a few civil society groups issuing statements. That has been the end of it. And then the politician who openly threatened this journalist actually went on to contest for the flag bearer of the governing party and came second. And that tells you the impunity with which people who attack journalists and whistleblowers in our part of the world enjoy. And when that happens, it emboldens them to do more. There are no consequences. So I don't believe that we have enough outrage against such acts, and then we don't have enough public support for people who dedicate their lives to blowing the whistle, bringing out corruption, human rights abuses. When you get into trouble, you are mostly on your own. And that is what makes it difficult for many to join this fight.
Wow. Mimi, would you want to add something on that as well? Have you been called a snitch for doing your work?
Yeah, of course. So many times, depending on what the story is about, they choose to pick sides. And especially if the story is talking about corruption or holding government to account or questioning about why are these roads bad when a lot of money has been disbursed to refurbish the roads. Or if you're questioning why should people be dying in road accidents in this age, in Cameroon, for instance, if you want to question how funds are being managed at the level of hospitals, that people go to get just access to quality healthcare services in Cameroon and they have to pay a lot of money, that puts you on the edge. And those who are supporting the government wouldn't want to see stories like that. And that's when they will say, you are a destabilizer, you are treacherous, you are an enemy of the republic. And on the other hand, we have an armed conflict in Cameroon, which has been there since 2016. Thousands have died, a lot of young girls affected, children have not been able to go to school since this conflict started, lockdowns on a daily basis with a lot of business persons not able to make money because of this conflict. But then when you report about the atrocities committed by the armed separatist fighters in the Anglophone regions of Cameroon, they will flock to your page and call you a supporter of the regime, the same regime that is threatening to arrest you, killing journalists, attacking journalists on a daily basis. They would say you reported against them, actually because you are a supporter of the regime. So you are some sort of caught in the middle. The challenge with whistleblowers in Cameroon, like in dictatorial regimes in general, is that they are anonymous. Most of them do not really come forward openly to say, oh, this is what is happening, except they have some sort of influence, or maybe they are political leaders. The whistleblower can be anybody. It can be an actor of the civil society who's seen something happening somewhere and they said, oh, the country, the world needs to know about this. But most of those who come forward with these stories that we investigate are ordinary civilians that are scared to be named, that are scared to be identified. The social media has come with a lot of advantages and also disadvantages, but yeah. I think that it works in favor of some of the whistleblowers.
Manasseh, Mimi mentioned something about some whistleblowers that are not known. Do you ever feel that sometimes some of these ministers report each other to actually have their political fights and use journalists and whistleblowers?
Yes, it is very true. This happens in politics, in business, that if someone feels cheated, they go out of their way to try to get a journalist or someone to act on it. But I often say that the motive of the whistleblower is inconsequential if the issues they are reporting are of serious national interest, and finding redress or solution to those issues would help the society, except that you are a bit more careful in order not to be misled by someone with parochial interest in what they are giving to you as whistleblowers.
Okay, thank you so much, Manasseh. Mimi, do you want to add anything before we wrap up?
Whistleblowers, their role is very, very important. They expose a lot of things happening in our society. It doesn't matter where they belong. In a country like Cameroon, sometimes the governor or a minister will tell you, please, I'm just giving you this information because people have to know, because sometimes they want change. Like Manasseh said, sometimes an authority would want some to see some changes, but they cannot openly say it because they are trying to protect not just themselves, but also their job and their family. Mm. So they come to you as a journalist to expose that story. So you need to investigate. It doesn't matter where the story is coming from. If you can investigate as a journalist and see that what the person is saying is actually true. So I think this conversation is very important. It brings to light the fact that whistleblowers are actually playing a very huge role in the society, but they are some sort of concealed. They are hidden. And I also want to really appreciate you, Josie, and DW for bringing up this topic, because without them, sometimes we are not who we are as journalists, because we need them on a daily basis to expose some of those things that are happening around them. And, you know, if they don't bring the story, sometimes we don't have stories to investigate.
I was speaking to journalist Mimi Mefo and Ghana's investigative journalist Manasseh Azure Awuni. As Africa's whistleblowers face escalating threats, what are some nations doing to shield those brave truth tellers? Protective laws, support systems, and even financial incentives exist in some countries. Experts, however, argue that much more still needs to be done. DW's George Okachi spoke to some advocacy groups to find out the state of whistleblowers and how to further protect them.
Hello, my name is Elijah Kandiro-Tok. I serve as a senior human rights officer with the Kenya National Commission on Human Rights. As we join the global community in commemorating the International Day of the Victims of Enforced Disappearances, our attention is to the whistleblowers in Africa who, due to their work, have consistently faced escalating threats. It is important for us to recognize that it is in our own interest as Africans, as governments, as organizations, to encourage whistleblowers to speak up so as to avert any harm or prevent damage or to improve the public service and to strengthen our organizational or public accountability in wherever spaces that we are. So the measures that can be taken by African countries to shield whistleblowers include, we need to relook inward and review some of our laws and policies that might hinder whistleblowing practices. We should look at how confidentiality procedures are done, whether whistleblowers are gagged, are there any laws that promote secrecy, as opposed to balancing it against public interest, and then also to have the consideration of human rights-based approach so that where there are laws that are conflicting and might hinder whistleblowers, then these laws could also be reviewed. It is also high time that governments in Africa have wide national consultations so that we can, even as these processes of reviewing and also reflection inward can be undertaken, and so that we can come up with appropriate policies that are tailored and fit within the various contexts that pervade within our African societies, so that we can strengthen the supervisory bodies and have a wide approach where we call upon representatives from various ministries, independent agencies, civil society organizations, the judiciary, regulatory professional bodies, amongst others, so that a proper nuanced approach to whistleblowing can be crafted and also can inform our policies and decision making in terms of safeguarding whistleblowers.
My name is Matthias Shipeta from Haki Africa. I'm the rapid response officer. So you would say that I'm in the front line in terms of issues of enforced disappearances. As we speak, in Kenya in the last 10 years, we've had over 300 people who have disappeared or extrajudicially killed. And it's not clear whether they were killed or not, but the numbers have been very high. You've just seen the work of the Kenyan anti-finance bill protest the Gen Z protests that we've had. We've had over 60 people that have actually disappeared in the country, with the names and data of their families and pictures of who disappeared being shared to many platforms. But up to date, some of them are still unknown. So that's the case of Kenyan Story. So it's a duty both by the whistleblowers themselves that they need to stay in a secure place or watch out against anyone who may want to abduct them. But then again, the government must ensure protection of everyone in the country, that such people who abduct people in hooded masks and with private cars and come to somebody's house and they take you, that they ensure that these matters do not happen again, because that will ensure protection for everyone.
Those were some members of advocacy groups on the state of whistleblowers and how they can be fully protected. That's it for this edition of Africa Link. But remember, you are not just a listener. You are a vital part of our community. Your feedback and participation are what makes this podcast what it is. We want to hear your thoughts, your concerns, and your ideas. Connect with us on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Follow us on Spotify or your favorite podcast platform. Remember to click follow so you can catch all of Africa Link episodes. This podcast was co-produced and edited by Eddie Micah Jr. My name is Josie Mahachi. Thanks for listening, and it's bye for now.
DW. Made for Minds.